Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm FPL Harry.
Harry, game week 5. It was a little bonkers, wasn't it? We had 3 red cards. We had no clean sheets at all on Saturday. And then an injury to the 5th most transferred in player, who was also the 6th most capped in player, which saw him withdrawn on 21 minutes. We'll talk about him in a minute because I imagine that was painful for you as a Chelsea fan also. But you decided it was time for your first chip of the season in game week 5. So how did that go?
I did. I decided that this would be the week that I played my bench boost. On Saturday afternoon, it was looking pretty dreadful. I had Pedro Porro and Dubravka. Dubravka getting 4 points looked great. But when you look at the fact my other goalkeeper was sat on -3 at that point, it didn't feel quite as good, even though it was more I was thinking, well, I've made the wrong decision here because I should have just had Dubravka. But you can never predict that you're going to have a goalkeeper sent off. But actually, when it came to Sunday, I had Senesi on my bench as part of my bench boost. He came in with 9 with a clean sheet and DEFCON once again at home to Newcastle. And then a bit of an unpredictable return, a player that we spoke about so much after game week 1 and then has been quite quiet since then, was Reinders of Manchester City. Away at Arsenal, I didn't expect very much from him. I actually thought he was one of the weakest players on my bench boost, but he got the assist. He ended up with 2 bonus points and his defensive contributions for the first time this season, also picking up 9. So it's a chip that I always find difficult to plan, particularly when it's in a single game week at the beginning of the season. So I'm quite happy to get it out of the way. And it definitely propped up what was quite a disappointing game week elsewhere in my team. How about yours?
Do you know, mine was almost the polar opposite of yours, because on Saturday, it was all looking so great. I was on a 1.4 million green arrow. I was thinking, right, here we go. I had a green arrow last week, a massive green arrow this week. This is going to be great. And on Saturday morning, Lee was like, what do you need from today? And I said, well, this is the problem because I need Semenyo to do absolutely nothing. Ideally nothing, you know, even lose the clean sheet point. That'd be ideal because I also don't have a Bournemouth defender. So if Bournemouth could, you know, lose their clean sheet with nothing for Semenyo, perfect. And then I need to get away because I don't have any Manchester City or Arsenal assets. So that game was really concerning because I was like, if it ends up 0-0 and there's clean sheets for the Arsenal defenders, that's going to punish me. If it ends up with Man City scoring, you'd bet on Haaland being part of it and that's going to punish me. And then I just was like, and I need Reinders to do nothing. Fast forward through Sunday, Semenyo didn't do anything from an attacking perspective, but we'll talk about later, picks up DEFCON. And so that's a frustration because he ends up on 5. So that hurts. You've just mentioned Senesi. He's got a hole. That hurts. And then Reinders decided it was time to assist Haaland and bring back the attacking returns that we haven't seen since game week 1. So I ended up basically on a bit of a grey. I think I lost about 5k in the end, which when you were 1.4 million up heading into Sunday, to lose 1.4 million in rank because of, you know, 2 games effectively, that's really difficult.
Yeah. And I feel like this time last week, we were sitting here saying, oh, we all need to start playing our defenders. There's not going to be any goals or anything like that. And now we're sitting here the same time next week with 2 clean sheets for the whole game week. And they both came in the same game with Bournemouth drawing 0-0 with Newcastle. And every other game had both teams scoring it. But actually, they didn't feel like there were that many attacking returns to go around apart from a couple of players. Like, I was looking at some of the data. No player in the entire game had over 1 XG this week. It just felt very spread out. And it remains as bad as, you know, some of the ranks are, and we might not have had the best start we'd ever want. It feels still really difficult to predict at the moment. And as a result, lots of people are in a little bit of a situation where they're trying to change a lot. And I think we're going to see an awful lot of wildcards activated this week.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I am one of them. So I pondered, actually, I was planning to play my wild card on Saturday lunchtime as soon as the game reloaded. And then in the end decided, actually, I'll just sit and watch this Liverpool game and see how that goes. And then by that point, I was like, oh, maybe I'll just watch the 3 o'clocks. Because obviously nothing's going to change in that period of time in terms of price changes. So I thought, I've got plenty of time. And then because by the end of Saturday, my team was looking all right, I knew I was going to take a price hit on De Kuyper, but I felt like I just valued watching the Sunday games just to make sure. But actually, the Sunday games just killed it again. And I thought, now's the time, particularly with the Ronaldo red card sitting on my bench as well. Thankfully, I decided not to play him this week and I'd benched him. Yeah, it felt like the right time for me. So I am one of the wild carders at the moment. And I think, you know, it's not going to be a low chip week. It's definitely going to be a week where we see a number of chips played. We've already got over 226,000 wild card chips activated. There's also over 145,000 1,000 triple captains activated. And those numbers will just continue to grow as we get through this week, I'm pretty sure, because you know, there's a lot of football to come in midweek as well. Should we rip the Band-Aid off, Harry?
Yeah.
Or should we start with your team? Because it kind of feels like the Chelsea game was one of the biggest talking points of the game week. Chelsea had more cards than they had shots this week. 6 cards, 5 shots. I don't remember that ever happening before. I'll let you talk about it because I don't even know what I make of this game.
Yeah, nor do I really. And I think as Chelsea fans, on a side note, we need to kind of move on from this as quickly as possible because we've been great over the past 6 months from the majority 100%. Of the time. And from an FPL point of view, if you do have Chelsea players in your team, it's also worth doing the same thing, I think. But from a performance point of view, a red card so early on, not a great decision by one of the most highly owned goalkeepers in FPL at the moment. If anyone like me is sat there with Sanchez with a -3, and every time Man United can score a goal, he starts to lose even more points because he still gets the minus from goals conceded. It's worth just noting on Sanchez, though, he got sent off for denial of a goal scoring opportunity, which is a 1-game ban. And he'll actually serve that, I believe, in the cup midweek. Mm-hmm. So he should be back for Brighton at home in game week 6. Whether you want to give him another chance after he's just scored you -3 is a whole nother kettle of fish, but he should be back available for that game at home to Brighton against, in theory, his previous club. From a Chelsea point of view, I think the big takeaway from it was the news that we had around Cole Palmer, apart from the Sanchez red card. So it sounds like Cole Palmer is continuing to manage this injury that he's had. We saw it rule him out of game week 3 just before the international break and him not go on England duty. He came off the bench against Brentford. He then played a lot of minutes against Bayern Munich. And then he had to be taken off early in this game. And apparently that is just a reoccurrence and a continuation of that injury. And I think it's a very important one because a lot of people on wildcard were probably looking at going with Palmer because apart from Liverpool, in game week 7, the run of fixtures that Chelsea have for a couple of months now does start to look pretty nice that you do want to have a bit of investment in. But it looks like, from my point of view, I don't think we'll be going anywhere near him until we see that run of games and run of minutes. And I actually think the player who's likely to take his place in a lot of those wildcards played in the opposition this week.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that was one of the matches that had the biggest kind of stop and check for me was the Chelsea game when I'm thinking about wildcard, because Cole Palmer was absolutely part of my wildcard plans. It was like, right, I will wildcard this week. That'll give me Haaland. I'll move to Cole Palmer. I'll target the Arsenal fixture shift that's coming, get a few more Manchester City players in. And that reoccurrence of the injury for Palmer was just a bit of a frustration because I'm looking at it thinking, well, I mean, maybe it's good for me in FPL because I don't now have to find 10.5 for Palmer. I can just stick with João Pedro. And we know that when Cole Palmer's been out, actually, João Pedro has benefited massively from that because he plays in that position that maybe we like him better in from an FPL perspective because he's more likely to get the attacking return. So from that side, I guess it's okay. But it definitely feels like an opportunity now to look elsewhere in the middle. And Bruno Fernandes comes up with his second goal of the campaign, picks up another 3 bonus points in this one. Second-digit, double-digit haul of the season for him. What are your thoughts on him? Because honestly, he's a player that I haven't paid much attention to because he's sitting in that deeper role. So when you see him on the team sheet kind of playing in that deeper position, you think, well, not that interested. But then he's always picking up the extra DEFCON points. He's still chipping in with the goals. He's obviously going to stick on penalties as well. So there's definitely still a route to points, even from that maybe not quite so attractive deeper position that he's been playing in.
Yeah, Bruno Fernandes is a really interesting one. He was actually second for XG this week with 0.82, only behind Mateta of Crystal Palace. And he missed a penalty earlier on in the season. And if he'd have scored that penalty, he'd be the second highest scoring midfielder in the entire game, having played Arsenal, Manchester City and Chelsea as 3 of his first 5 fixtures. And I went with him in game week 1. And this is kind of what I was expecting from him. A little bit of a frustrating own when he doesn't get anything, but he does pop up with a goal. He is on penalties and he does get some of the added DEFCON benefits, which we saw more in the first couple of games, less so recently. But he is just going to do this over the course of the season. It's not the most exciting pick. If you watch Manchester United, he's on the ball a lot, but it's not like Salah. It's not like if you're owning a Haaland where they're going to be in the box all the time and taking a lot of shots. But he has the ability to get returns like he did again here. And every goal he scores is never a 5-point goal with Bruno Fernandes. Sometimes you have a midfielder and they'll score or get an assist and they'll end up with, you know, 6 or 7 points, and that's fine. But every time Bruno gets a return, it's a 10-pointer because of how good he is for the bonus points. And that feels like such an additional appeal to me. And part of the reason I started with him, and when we're talking about wildcard, one of the reasons I haven't activated it yet is because I already own Bruno. One of the changes I was considering making on wildcard was doing Bruno out and Cole Palmer in. And if I don't need to make that, it feels less attractive, the other changes that I might need to make. So I think he will be the one that fills in that space for a lot of people with Palmer being injured. I think the other option is to find money, even more money, to go up to Salah. But if you don't want to go for the sort of Salah-Haaland combination, I just think Bruno is perfectly made in some ways for the way that FPL is this year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because honestly, Bruno wasn't somebody that I'd really particularly considered going into wildcard, because my plan was to have Haaland, to have Palmer or Saka. And then if I had probably Palmer, I'd then use Eze as a route into that Arsenal attack. The other player that I was looking at, and this maybe is a nice segue into the Arsenal Man City game, was Phil Foden, because the last couple of games I've been so impressed by him. Played really well in the Champions League, played incredibly well back in game week 4. Goes into this one and I was like, right, okay, here's an opportunity for us to watch him play against Arsenal. And it's not an easy game by any stretch of the imagination, because it's Arsenal defensively. We all know that Arsenal are an incredible defensive unit. So wasn't necessarily expecting to set the world on fire, but I was really underwhelmed by Foden's performance in this one. And it became very clear that actually for me, paying the extra to have Foden over Reinders just doesn't feel worth it. You know, we said already that Reinders gets his first attacking return since game week 1, first defensive contribution points as well, share of the bonuses, level with Haaland in terms of the points that he scored for this week. He also created 2 big chances in this one, which is more than any other player across the game week. Now, we've already said it was particularly, it wasn't a particularly good game week for XG and all of that, but the fact that he creates the most big chances of the game week. And he's 5.6 million, and he seems to be a bit, pretty much an ever-present in that Man City team at the moment. So why go in for the more expensive asset when I could get a cheaper one? Now, Reinders is my big regret. He's my massive, massive regret. I made the decision to take him out about 2 hours before the game week 1 deadline, just to save a little bit of money in that midfield, because I felt I valued having 0.5 in the bank and went for Jewsbury Hall instead. Reinders, I should have just stuck with him from the offset, but now, looking at that Man City team, I kind of feel like Reinders is far better than a lot of the players that you've got to spend more money on there.
Yeah, it feels like a classic case of a more expensive player feels better because I'm having to spend more money on them, not actually because of what you're getting from them. I think Reinders is the only Manchester City player to play 90 minutes in every single game so far this season. And for 5.6, he just feels like an ever reliable. I don't think it's impossible that we see you go with someone like a Reinders and a Phil Foden if you are looking for midfielders you want to buy. I think they offer very, you know, different things when you're picking your team. But with the short-term fixtures for Manchester City like Burnley, I think it's then Brentford and Everton, you could absolutely have a look at it. But when you're comparing someone like a Phil Foden that you mentioned to a Bruno Fernandes, as much as a Phil Foden, when he absolutely turns it on, is one of the most exciting players and one of the best players to have in your FPL team when you're watching a game of football, just think you know what you're going to get with someone like a Bruno Fernandes, and you don't worry when that Manchester United team comes out whether he's going to be on it. The other benefit to them is they don't play in Europe this season, whereas you know, Manchester City do, and they've got some big Champions League games coming up, and they do all the way into December. And every week you'll be saying, okay, did Foden play in the Champions League? Yes, he did. Is he then going to start Burnley at home the week after? And there's just a lot of confusion in there. And I think we'll see it similarly when we look at some of the Arsenal players. Like, you looked at Bukayo Saka, and he is back available for them now. But they have really strengthened in some of those wide areas. Like you mentioned Eze, they've got Noni Madueke, obviously started the season pretty well for them. They then got Kai Havertz up front alongside Gyökeres. All of these players are going to start to get a little bit more attention. But it feels like both Arsenal and Manchester City are building these sort of super squads in a way where they've got so many competitions that it's just a little bit of a concern. So someone like Bruno, going back to him, that I just know is going to be there every week and doesn't play Europe. And similarly, when we talk about Semenyo, I'm just quite excited to have some players in my team who don't play three times a week. And I actually think there was a bit of a benefit to that. So Reinders looks great and he seems indestructible at the moment. And there's so many times we've said that about a Manchester City player and the next week they'll probably miss out. But he feels like the pick of the midfielders.
Yeah, he does for me as well. And I think also the fact that he's 5.6 is great at enabling you to have somebody like Bruno Fernandes, or if you want to go with the Salah-Haaland double up, which is what I'm currently thinking I'm going to try and do for the next couple of weeks on wildcard whilst we get certain players back from injury, i.e. Bukayo Saka, and let's talk about him in a minute, but also what gives me a bit of time to keep my eye on the Isak situation and when he might start getting regular starts for Liverpool, because that might be the moment that I want to shift the way I'm invested in Liverpool. Let's talk about Arsenal for a minute then. Gabriel Martinelli came off the bench, scored for the second match in a row in all competitions. He's now got 4 attacking returns in his last 5 matches against Manchester City, a couple of goals and a couple of assists there for him. Played really well when he came on. Bukayo Saka, though, impressed me when he came off the bench in this one. Decent level of minutes. Has kind of put the cat amongst the pigeons a little bit for me, because I wasn't quite expecting him to come back this quickly. It kind of came a bit from nowhere, didn't it? It's like, oh, Saka's back in training. Oh, Saka's on the bench. Oh, here he is for the whole of the second half. So in my head on wildcard, I was going to go Eze because it was cheaper. Then he was benched in this one as well. I was going to save myself a little bit of money and use that money to reinvest across the rest of the squad. I still think I might do that because I'm going to want to go quite heavily on the Arsenal defence. Even without the clean sheet in this one, I still think defensively they are very, very good. And Manchester City are just a very good attacking side. So no shame to lose your clean sheet to Manchester City. But how are you feeling about that Arsenal midfield? Saka over Eze feels like the conversation at the minute, because Madueke is just an unfortunate casualty of Saka coming back, I think. Yeah. And it's going to be between those two, I guess, for most FPL managers.
Yeah, I still think that even on that left-hand side, and I know Eze played some minutes centrally whilst Martin Odegaard's been out, but I still feel when he comes back, he'll take that spot. And then we've seen Martinelli doing all he can to get that start back on that left-hand side. So I'm just a little bit cautious, as much as I think when Eze's on the pitch, he's fantastic and he looked great at times yesterday as well. But for me, it would be Bukayo Saka if I had the money, or it would actually be no one in the midfield, but most likely Gyökeres potentially going up front, because it sounds like he's also taking penalties off Bukayo Saka. We saw Gyökeres score one at home to Leeds earlier on in the season. And if Saka has lost that appeal, although he didn't take that many and, you know, he often handed them out to much of our FPL manager frustrations, I still think those are the two in Gyökeres and Saka that I would look at if I wanted to invest in the attack. But part of me in my mind still thinks that Mikel Arteta may have learned his lesson a little bit with the amount of minutes that he's asked some of his players to play over the past couple of seasons, in particular Bukayo Saka, a player who is majority of the time, if he's fit and available, he'll play, and he'll play almost 90 minutes. And we saw that sort of the issue with that come with a 3-month timeout last year, and of course the spell injured at the beginning of the season. So with the likes of the Champions League and them signing the likes of Eze, Madueke, with the other options they've got in there, I do just have it in the back of my mind that Saka might not be quite as 100% nailed as maybe we've put him in the camp before. And I actually think Gyökeres is where I'm most likely to go if I was to invest in Arsenal at the moment.
And Gyökeres is really interesting because, you know, we've seen over the last 5 matches so far this season that against the more traditionally difficult games, Gyökeres has had a bit of a struggle. He has kind of struggled to get involved in the game. But against Leeds back in game week 2, he was incredibly exciting. And with the fixture swing that's coming in for Arsenal, with the on paper nicer fixtures, when you look at the fixture difficulty ratings, Gyökeres does look like he'll be a really nice option for FPL managers. My slight issue with Gyökeres isn't actually anything to do with him at all. It's to do with the fact that we've only got 3 forward slots in our team. And if you're going to take one up with Erling Haaland, which, let's be honest, I think we all have to with the way that he's playing right now, back at the top of the fantasy rankings where he belongs, and Alvargal, 3 bonus points, 46 for the season so far. He just looks like, I don't like to say essential at game week 5, but essential. So if you've got him locked in on one of them, João Pedro continues to look like a pretty good pick. Chelsea fixtures are good. With Palmer out, we know that, you know, João Pedro often is better because he gets to play in that position that he really likes in the 10. That leaves you with 1 slot up top. Now, if you're thinking about Isak and when he eventually might start, then you got to think about where that third slot's going to go. Is it going to be Isak? Is it going to be Jokeres? Are you going to take the third forward slot down, or are you going to have a, to enable you to have a bigger midfield if you want to have a Salah or a Bruno or, you know, Palmer or Saka when Palmer's back again? Like, I think you have to really consider where the money is going. And for me, Jokeres is one of those that I'm looking at thinking, well, ideally, I'd really like my front line to be Haaland, João Pedro and Isak. And that's going to mean that I can't get Jokeres in, which feels difficult, hence why I'm looking at the Arsenal midfield. And I think there's going to be some difficult conversations to be had with how you invest, particularly with Liverpool and Arsenal, because if you go with one of them up top, the other side's going to have to come in the middle. And I'm not sure how I feel about the Liverpool midfield at the moment. They feel really difficult to invest. Just the one assist for Mo Salah, nothing for Gakpo. Wirtz, even more frustratingly, I mean, I very, very nearly did Wirtz to Semenya this week. And then I just thought, just give him one more week in the derby. Doesn't start, comes off the bench, gets booked, finishes on 0 points. In the end, I was relieved he did. Otherwise, Ronaldo would have come off my bench for -2. So a 0-pointer felt quite good in the end. But that Liverpool midfield, and I think we'll move on to Liverpool and Everton, because it feels like it sits in conjunction with Arsenal, doesn't it? Like, you have to make choices between those two. That's how it feels to me anyway. That is, do I go for one in attack and one in midfield, or the other way around?
Yeah, and I have similar issues and concerns with the Liverpool attack that I do with the Arsenal attack. And I suppose the other slight doubt with Jokeres is we're not that far away from having Kai Havertz back and available. And
no.
When that happens, you've got another element of how many minutes do they play, even if they do start? Are they going to start every week? Because Kai Havertz offers them something very different to what Jokeres does. And it might depend on the fixture, but I see the same at Liverpool. It felt like Gakpo was going to be the most nailed out of the midfielders. And that probably is still correct, although his returns have dried up a little bit since the beginning of the season. And as you say, Wirtz not in the lineup. And yes, you're talking very much like you want Alexander Isak, but I can't help but look at Ekitike and think he's not going to want to just sit on the sidelines for the rest of forever with the way that he's playing. And there's still going to be competition there. And we've seen Isak struggle to play three times a week when he was at Newcastle. And at Newcastle, he had to do it a lot of the time because they had an injured Callum Wilson as the main backup, or Gordon, who needed to be playing on the left-hand side. But when Liverpool have got an Ekitike who is playing incredibly well for the start of the season, it doesn't feel like there's a need to force Isak to play more minutes than maybe he's able to. So it feels like a little bit like at Arsenal, at Liverpool, I'm looking at trying to squeeze Mo Salah in alongside Erling Haaland because I just know what I'm going to get from him. And I'm not sure the others are worth the gamble at the moment.
No, absolutely. Which is why on wildcard right now, I got both Salah and Haaland in, because I feel like, and my team needed a wildcard massively, but I wasn't in a place where I felt like I could make the decision about the Arsenal attack, about the Liverpool attack, about Isak. Like, there were so many uncertainties in those moments. So I thought, well, actually, the best thing to do here, given I have two transfers going into this week before my wildcard, so as I come out, I'm still going to have two, is just to build the wildcard. So the wildcard that I've built right now has a little bit of money in the bank and enough money to have Salah become Saka and to have Isidore, who's my current third forward, become Isak. So I've left the ability to move the money around so I can swap my investments. But right now, I'm sticking with Salah because, I mean, I can't help but also feel slightly annoyed by Salah and slightly disappointed in Salah. And I know that that is not the right, you know, historically, I would never, and I wouldn't say that if my husband was in the room either, about Mo Salah, because he probably is the greatest FPL asset of all time and Liverpool's Egyptian king. However, 30 points so far this season. There's only been one season in the last, what's that, There's only been one season in the last nine where he has scored less points than this by game week 5. In his highest scoring, he was on 50 by now. So 20 points more than he's got so far. It's not even like I'm looking at him and thinking, oh, you've been a bit unlucky. Like, I'm not watching him in games thinking, oh, you should have got another 20 points. Because sometimes that happens, right? Sometimes you watch an FPL asset and you think, yeah, actually, you're really unlucky that you've not got 20, 30 points more than you have right now. But with Salah, I'm looking at him thinking, I mean, maybe I've been a little bit fortunate to get to the 30-point mark with him over these opening 5 weeks. So, just an assist in this one. I think I was happy with just an assist in the end out of him, because there was one other opportunity where maybe he could have scored. But otherwise, he wasn't, I don't know, the way that Liverpool are playing right now, it was definitely the Ekitike show again, this one.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on Salah. If I had to say 30 points so far this season, if I had to say whether he was unlucky or lucky to get to where he is, I would say he's more on the lucky side. He scored very late on in one of the games. He got a very late assist against Bournemouth and then a very late penalty against Burnley. And in another world, you know, maybe only one of those three returns come in, and it's looking a lot less. And yes, he's been fantastic for us previously, but his price is a lot higher this year. And we've got to be realistic that in order to have him in our team, if we also want Erling Haaland at the moment, who is performing very consistently and starting very well, as he seems to do every single season, it's an awful lot of money to pay, especially if you're not going to be captaining Mo Salah over the next couple of weeks. So I still think it's the most reliable route. And if you can get to have him and Haaland, it's definitely worth it, because I'm not sure I trust any of the others at the moment. But I've actually sold Mo Salah as one of my two transfers, I've confirmed over the weekend, in order to free up money to buy Erling Haaland for the next couple of games. It might still be a wild card for me this week. It might not. And we might be wild carding in a few weeks to buy Mo Salah back if he shows us why we shouldn't be selling him. But at the moment, it's just too much to be paying. Now, a few players on the opposition side of this who do actually show that they are worth the money that people are paying for them. One of them in Jack Grealish, another one in Illiman and Dai, and a third one in one of the DEFCON players of the season, and we knew he was going to be, in James Tarkowski. Any of those taking your fancy on a wild card this week?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because actually Everton, I was quite impressed by the fight back from Everton in this one. The first half, it was, you know, it was all Liverpool really. But the second half, Liverpool seemed to fall asleep a little bit. I had Virgil in defence, but I was thinking the clean sheet looks fairly locked here at halftime. But the second half, Everton showed a lot of spirit. And the fixtures are nice for Everton. So you look at them over the next few weeks, it's West Ham up next before they've got Palace. Man City's difficult, obviously. Spurs defensive have been quite solid this season, so maybe that's not as easy as it first looks. But then Sunderland, Fulham, Manchester United, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest, there's definitely goals and there's definitely potential in those matches. But they also feels like there's a lot of DEFCON potential for Tarkowski, because these are teams that are going to come and attack. And actually, that's kind of what you want, isn't it, with Tarko? So he's definitely an option. I think the thing that puts me off somewhat is that he's relatively expensive. And when you're building a squad, if you're trying to keep Salah and Haaland, or even if you're not, even if you're just going with one of them, but you're also trying to fit in more expensive assets around them, whether it be Saka or whether it be, you know, the more premium defenders, Tarko feels like he's just that 0.5 more than I'd ideally like to spend on an Everton defender. But he is proving time and time again that he's worth it. Jack Grealish is the one that I'm really interested in, though, I think, from an Everton perspective. He was one of six players to register three chances for his teammates in game week 5. So the most creative players across the weekend. Maybe a little bit unlucky not to return something for his owners in this one. Just feels like if Everton get a goal, Grealish is in some form or another going to be part of it. Back to the Grealish that we loved at Aston Villa from an FPL perspective. That's how it feels when I'm watching him. I feel like there's always an opportunity for him to get something, whether it's from a set piece, whether it's from, you know, out open play. I just think Grealish and at the price point feels quite a nice investment in that midfield.
Yeah, I think both Grealish and Dyer are worth looking at. I, as you say, as just a fan of English football in the Premier League, it's so nice to see Jack Grealish back doing what he is. I've been really impressed by Illiman and Dai. He's probably the one that I'd go with, probably on penalties. And he actually got DEFCON in this game. But we also can't look past a cheaper option in Kieran Dewsbury-Hall. He is on 4 yellow cards now after 5 games. So only one away from a suspension. But at a cheap price of 5 million, there are some other options at that price which you could look at. But I think on wildcard, with those fixtures you mentioned, there would almost certainly be an Everton player in my team, I think.
I've actually got rid of Keenan Dewsbury-Hall on wildcard. I found him quite infuriating to own, because the problem with him is that he's my he's always my fifth midfielder. And with a front three that you want to start every week, he'd end up on the bench. And so I've played him in weeks where he's had the good fixtures. And in those weeks, he hasn't done anything for me. And then in other weeks where he's had a more difficult fixture and I've been forced to bench him, then we've seen some returns. It's been a bit of a struggle with him. But I can, you know, in the cheaper assets, I think there's one in particular, and when we get to the Leeds game later, we'll talk about him, that I'm looking at as a Dewsbury Hall replacement, because I do like the Leeds fixtures and I still have my bench boost chip. So I'm looking at a bench boost chip coming in and around the nice Leeds fixtures that I can target. Mm. So I feel like I might move there. Shall we go and talk about Grealish's old side and Aston Villa? Because Ollie Watkins, is he your Haaland sacrifice?
He's actually not.
Is he not?
The fact that I have used two transfers on my team and I still have Morgan Rodgers and Ollie Watkins in
no
my
way,
team.
Harry.
Rodgers is currently being benched at home to Fulham next week, but it was actually Chris Wood that made way, partly because of the fixture that they both have in game week 7, where Watkins has Burnley at home. But if there's anything that's going to push me to wildcard a team this week that actually looks not bad on paper going into game week 6, it will be the fact that I still own Morgan Rodgers and Ollie Watkins. Now, Aston Villa found their way to score a goal in game week 5. And as soon as we all saw the notification come in that they'd scored, we were all thinking, who's it going to be? Has Watkins finally scored? Was it Rodgers? And then Kamara assist for a Matty Cash goal. Just what all our FPL managers needed from our Aston Villa assets. After 4 weeks of no goals, that was the first goal they came up with. But he did have a couple of chances at the end, but I think if you want to hold on to them for two more games, there's part of me that thinks surely eventually, but I've been saying surely eventually for 4 weeks now and it's never happened. So apart from if you want to have a bit of blind hope, there's no real reason to hold on to them, I don't think.
Oh, it's so infuriating, isn't it? I mean, I feel like Ollie Watkins and in pre-season, he was phenomenal. He was so good. So were Aston Villa. They were in great form. He was scoring goals for fun. No attempt on goal again this week. Again. And it's just like come on, like Ollie, like what do we have to do to get something out of you? I've taken a couple of price drops from you now, so I'm losing value. I'm trying to keep my team value half decent so that on wildcard I can bring stuff up. He's involved. He's getting some touches. He's getting touches in the right areas, but he's not really doing anything with those balls that he's receiving in the right places. I honestly thought that Harvey Elliott's arrival alongside Morgan Rodgers, there'd be more creativity in that team. They'd score more goals. They kind of relied on a Matt Cash wonder goal. Like it was like lovely for Matt Cash. You've got Matt Cash, you're delighted by that one. Mm. But it's difficult, isn't it? And you're right. The Burnley game in a couple of weeks' time, I think, is why a lot of people are still having patience with Ollie Watkins. But my patience long expired. And how you have two that you're still staying patient with, your most loyal man in the world, Harry. But I think it's difficult, isn't it, with them, because we're just not seeing... We're not seeing enough in front of goal from Aston Villa. We're also just, it's so much money. And there's other players at the minute. You know, we've spent all this time talking about, we've talked about Gyökeres so far. We talked about João Pedro earlier. We're going to have probably a conversation around Mateta in a little bit. Like there are other, even Richarlison on the score sheet again this week. Like if you're looking for budget and ways to get to Haaland, Ollie Watkins feels like a no-brainer of a sell, even despite the fact that in a couple of weeks he's got Burnley, who are struggling when it comes to expected goals conceded, because he just seems out of form. Villa generally are out of form in front of goal, and it's hard to stay loyal while you wait for them to come out of it.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this Sunderland fixture was the last one, and then when I saw Sunderland get a red card, I thought, well, this will be it. Here we go. Yeah. This is going to be the time where Villa finally get on the score sheet. And although they did, it just wasn't where we wanted it to be. So that's the decision I've really got to make. My team looks all right on paper for the next couple of weeks, but I have Ollie Watkins and Morgan Rodgers who have lost faith a few weeks ago, and I put blind faith in them for a couple of weeks. And I still seem to have them. And that's the decision I feel like I've got to make. And if you're on wildcard, I'm sure you're all saying they were the first two or the first one that was probably taken out. When you're activating it. Let's talk about your team. Actually, one of the teams that's probably seen a lot of attention early on this season is Spurs. 2-0 down early on, but to turn it around and actually looked very good in the second half, particularly when new signing Xavi Simmons came into the game, I believe. So talk me through how you felt about this one. Of course, defensively, you've been very solid, but it was more about the attackers this week.
It was definitely. I mean, that was a reflection of the whole game week, right? More about the attackers than the defenders this week. Spurs, yeah, in last season, if we'd have gone 2-0 down away at Brighton, who are a bit of a bogey team for us, we never seem to do particularly well against Brighton, which is always difficult for me when I have to. I was glad it was you this week and not Az, otherwise we might have had a bit of a ding-dong on our hands. But yeah, I think, you know, we always struggle a little bit about them. And last season, that would have been a collapse from Spurs. We'd have ended up losing that game 4-0 or 5-0 and we just wouldn't have come back into it. This time around, there was a real strength of character about them and a real determination. And it was the best game I think I've watched Kudus play in a Spurs shirt. He was dogged and he was just involved in everything that was positive. And yeah, you know, the two assists that he gets maybe aren't... you know, maybe they're a little bit lucky. One's a shot that comes in off Richarlison. One is a good potential assist, but it becomes an own goal off Van Heek. But nonetheless, that's two more assists for his season. He's now top for assist level with Jack Grealish. So that's looking positive. But the difference maker was Xavi Simmons. He comes on, he's everywhere. He's creative. He's just sparks the rest of the team into life. And I think we... Historically, last season, we really struggled in the aftermath of European action. Like, it was a really difficult thing for us. I don't think we won at all in the aftermath of Europe last year. So I was pleased to see a little bit of rotation, not from an FPL perspective, obviously, because I think if you've spent Sony, you'll have been a bit disappointed to see him lose his spot. But Udogi was always first choice in that side. The same with Xavi Simmons, who was a player that I really seriously am considering on wildcard. I think, you know, he's come in, arrived at the club, immediately had two starts, one in the league, one in the Champions League. So maybe it was well earned, but he came on and really highlighted just how important he is. So I think if you can afford that 0.4 extra to go for Xavi Simmons over Kudus, that feels like a sensible thing to do. Mm-hmm. Richarlison with his fourth attacking return of the campaign, only Haaland and João Pedro have more now than Richarlison, so looking good. Little bit of a worry for his owners with Solanke coming back and starting to be available again. I think we'll see rotation around that front slot, particularly as Tell's not in the Champions League squad either and can play in that forward line. So maybe in the aftermath of Europe, we might see a little bit more from him, and that's something to just be mindful of. I guess the Spurs defenders are the one that we kind of maybe need to talk about, because Romero picks up 18 DEFCON this week. 18. The most across the game week for defenders. Incredibly good defensive performance from him. So despite the lack of a clean sheet, he still picks up those additional points. Pedro Porro, I think you're a bit unlucky if you're a Pedro Porro owner this week to just get one. Supplied a game week high, 15 crosses away at Brighton. Created two chances for his teammates as well. Decent week for potential attacking returns for Pedro Porro, but nothing there. And obviously Van de Ven, if you don't get the clean sheet, you're less likely to get anything out of him. But I think that Spurs generally are a hold. I think what we learned this week is positive for us. So any Spurs assets that you have, I think, are a hold. If you don't have any, then I think looking at Xavi Simmons feels like a really nice way to go, particularly at just 7 million.
Yeah, I think Xavi Simmons is probably the one, if I was looking to buy one this week or if I was on wildcard, would be the one I'd try to fit in. With Wolves at home, Leeds away over the next two, it still feels like and even Aston Villa at home after that, those three games feel like a pretty good point in order to invest. Let's talk about a player who feels like the headline, one of the headlines for the start of the season in Antoine Semenyo. No attacking returns, but that doesn't mean he wants to blank just yet. Picking up DEFCON for the first time this season and getting 5 points with the clean sheet. Bournemouth 0, Newcastle 0. I suppose not that much to talk about, apart from it was the only two clean sheets of the entire game week, as we've already mentioned. And DEFCON hero, I feel like I'm fully in my DEFCON era already with my team. I had four players get it this week, and it's just,
wow,
when you see them tick over that 10-point threshold and you get the plus two, it's almost as nice a feeling, if not more, than if you were to get an attacking return. Senesi was the one for me, up to 4.7 now. Him and Tarkowski, the two players to hit it already this season. I imagine he is going straight in on wildcard for you.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I did was get rid of Ollie Watkins for Haaland. And then the second thing I did was fix the Bournemouth issues in my team, because Semenyo I've been talking about for weeks now. And actually in game week 3, I decided that the best thing to do would be to go for Gibbs-White instead of Semenyo, only for then we saw the Nuno change of guard and all of that stuff happened at Nottingham Forest. And since then, it's been the biggest regret of my season so far, apart from not having Reinders in one, that I didn't go for Semenyo over Gibbs-White at that point, because one, he would have cost me less at that stage to invest in him. So that would have been better. And two, I'd have had the benefit of his big points haul last week and then another 5 points this week, because, you know, so actually this game, we decided not to watch this one. Both the games were televised in the UK and we watched the other one. So when it came up that this one finished 0-0, I was like, okay, feel like I've probably got away with one a little bit there with Semenyo, only to then see he got the dev con. I was like, oh, five hurt. So yeah, only Erling Haaland can better his 8.2 points per match now. He's just been unbelievable. I think probably the best value for money player in the game right now, closely backed up by his teammate Senesi, who at 4.7 just looks fantastic, doesn't he? And like you say, one of only two to get DEFCON every single week. And it's no joke to say that the DEFCON thing is really, it's really important. Like, it ticks in and you know you can't lose it. It's not like when the clean sheet goes and suddenly you're really frustrated at the end of the game. Like, when that ticks in, it's so good. So yeah, these two straight in. They both of them, I was like, I need both of you in my team. And Newcastle were another one that I'm kind of looking at, but it's really difficult because from an attacking perspective, I'm not really seeing anything major from them. And in fact, this has been, data-wise, the most boring game of the season so far. XG of just 0.7 across this one for both the teams. And when you break it down, Bournemouth were the best for XGC this week. So they were expected to concede just 0.24 goals. So it was basically a defensive show from both of the sides, both of them playing defensively really solid. I am looking at a Newcastle defender as well, possibly even Nick Pope in goal, because at five, saves a little bit of money on David Raya. Fixtures look nice. And Newcastle, a really good defensive unit so far.
Yeah, I actually think looking at some of the data, as you say, Newcastle have been very good. So defensively, more than going forward. I think almost time to wrap up. But there is one player which I've heard you mention earlier in the podcast that I think is worth talking about after a big return from him this week. So jumping to Wolves versus Leeds. And actually, one of the cheap midfielders that there has been a little bit of attention for, but I think this week will suddenly become very front of mind for a lot of people, is Anton Stach. Now, 0.14 XGI this week, getting two returns, the biggest overperformer in the game week, and actually made Leeds as a whole the biggest overperformer, scoring three goals from just 0.48 XG, compared to Wolves, who scored one goal from 1.78. So as much as this result makes Leeds look great and Wolves look quite poor, rooted to the bottom of the table, the data says a slightly different thing, but it really is Anton Stach that is getting it. He's 5 million. He's looking like he's going to get some DEFCON points, as he did here. He's taken some set pieces, as we saw with the free kick he scored. He got an assist in this as well. He looks like a very nice, reliable option with the upcoming Leeds fixtures.
I'm very upset with myself that I didn't go here this week, because I spent all this week talking to Lee about him and how excited I was about him. He was in both of the top XG underperformers and XA underperformers of the season so far. So he was the one that I was looking at thinking he is likely to get returns. And it was a great fixture against a Wolves side that have been defensively all at sea over the opening weeks of the season. So yeah, for him to then not only get a goal and also, you know, double that up with an assist and pick up DEFCON and pick up the maximum bonus points, I was incredibly cross with myself, because I was like, oh, I just knew he was going to be a really good option this week, and I should have gone there. But nonetheless, he is one that came in on my wild card as well, because I'm looking at a bench boost strategy probably in around game week 8. So when you look at the fixtures, and I think this is really important, like obviously there are other options I could have gone to, somebody like, you know, Jewsbury Hall, or there are others in the 5 million bracket that look quite nice. But when I'm looking at my team at the moment, I'm thinking about where I go, I'm looking at either a game week 8 or a game week 9 bench boost. And in those weeks, Leeds have got Burnley and West Ham. So having him and Goodmanson at the back, the double up of Leeds on the bench boost feels like the best strategy for a bench boost in game week 8 or 9. So if you are looking at wanting to play the bench boost in one of those 2 weeks and you're wildcarding at the moment, investing heavily in Leeds at a cheap price point, because Goodmanson's still 4, so I can spend 9 million on those two assets and hopefully get returns out of them as we saw this week.
And, you know, they're great for the bench boost, but they're also pretty good in having good squad depth going forward, which seeing some of the rotation and some of the surprise injuries that we've got, if you've got someone like a Goodmanson or a Stack who you might not want to play every week, but if you have an issue in your team, having that bit of squad depth, as you say, without having to invest very much in it, rather than, you know, going up to a 5.5 million midfielder or a 4.5 million defender is a really nice thing to do. And they've looked very good, particularly at home, but also to see them putting this performance away from home is another boost to them. And I think we're just generally seeing, as we saw with a few of the others this week, those newly promoted teams, often we write them off from an FPL point of view because they don't perform nearly well enough. But we definitely have 20 teams to pick from this season. Been very impressed by all three of those, in particular Leeds this week. It is yet another massive week of football, though. We have League Cup for all of the teams that were in Europe last year, plus we have the Europa League starting. So a whole list of Premier League teams in action. If you're making early transfers or if you're on wildcard, do keep an eye on these because it might give us an indication of who's injured, who's available, what's going to happen going forward. So do keep an eye on all of that.
Yeah, definitely. And in the aftermath of all that football, Kelly Jules and I will be back on Thursday. We'll be looking ahead to game week 6. And of course, I'll be sharing a wildcard update.
And if you haven't already done so, please don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League for this season. It is code XY6XPL. It has been great chatting with you, Sam, for the first time this season.
Yeah, it's been lovely. We should do this more often.
We should. Enjoy your wildcard tinkering. I am not jealous at all.
Oh, it's going to be a stressful week. See you later, Harry.
Bye.